Current state, daily on 90.5 WKAR and AM 870. And we're always at WKAR.org. In 1984, a Michigan woman named Betty Mahmoudi and her husband Syed took their young daughter, Matab, to visit his family in Iran for a couple of weeks. While there, Syed told Betty that he never intended to return to America and that he would never let her return to the United States with Matab. He threatened to kill Betty or separate her from Matab forever if she tried to escape. His vow was to raise Matab as a Muslim in Tehran. For 18 months, Betty and Matab were held captive, fearing for their safety and struggling to find a way out. Betty wrote about their captivity and their ultimate escape from Iran in the well-known book, Not Without My Daughter, which later was turned into a movie starring Sally Field. Now, 30 years after returning to the U.S., Matab Mahmoudi has written her own book. Scott Pohl talked with her about My Name is Matab. Here is a remarkable story, Scott.
It certainly is, Mark. Matab Mahmoudi and her mother still live in Michigan, and Matab invited me to her West Michigan home for an interview. She has spent much of her life afraid that her father would try to reclaim her or return to kill her mother. Matab Mahmoudi tells me that while she was on the set with the movie Not Without My Daughter being filmed, she never has read her mother's book. Still, she knows that her memories and those of her mother mesh quite closely.
You know, I find it interesting as an interviewer to talk with someone like you whose story begins as a child, that I don't really feel compelled to talk with you about your childhood or the incidents recounted in the early part of this book. I think this story is so well known, especially here in Michigan. It got so much news coverage at the time. I think many, many people in Michigan are already pretty familiar with the story of your childhood. And if they aren't, that's what the books are for, I suppose. But I do want to talk with you about your life after getting back to Michigan, and that's the purpose of talking with you today. And so the first thing I think that we should discuss is that for people who have not read your book, that you never spoke with your father again, never corresponded with him again, although he did continue to haunt your life. Can you just shed some light on what life was like for you as an adolescent, as a high schooler, and as a student at Michigan State University and beyond? What was life like for you under this shadow?
Well, first off, go green.
Go white.
Yes, I love that. But, you know, it's true. After our escape, this wasn't the end for us. This was, you know, a new chapter of fear in our lives. You know, my dad vowed that we would never escape, and that if we did manage somehow to escape, he swore he would spend the rest of his life looking for us, and he would kill Mom and take me back to Iran. And, you know, during those months in Iran, he said many times how he would kill her, and I really did truly believe he would kill her. So we were afraid that he was behind every corner, and we took a lot of security precautions. And even when he was quiet and I didn't hear anything from him, there were still enough situations that let us know that this danger was still present. You know, we would be contacted by the FBI and Mom would be told how she's supposed to be executed. Or we'd be contacted and Mom would be told that, you know, my dad has left Iran and it shouldn't be ruled out that he's returned to the States to recover his wife and child. And there was nothing they could do to help us. And the first time I heard directly from him through media, I was 16. It was about 10 years after our escape. And his message to me was one of control. His message was that I was his daughter and he wouldn't allow me to be anything but Muslim. You know, instead of, you know, it's been 10 years and I miss you and I love you and I hope you're well, it was control. So, you know, every time we would let down our guard, then again, there would be this reminder. You know, as a child, I wore a panic button around my neck. You know, wherever we lived, the police knew us well, so they would be prepared to respond if necessary. We had a security system on the house. I used a different name in grade school. The people living close to us after Not Without My Daughter was released knew the situation, but then they too helped to provide an element of security. And we were always very cautious. We just simply said we lived in Michigan. We didn't say anything more specific than that.
including your time at Michigan State University. Now, I was a reporter at WKAR during your time at Michigan State University, and I have to say, if I had any inclination that you were a student at MSU, I would have sought you out to talk with you. I would have tried to do that. But to my knowledge, no one knew that Betty's daughter was a student at MSU. Am I right about that, first of all? And if so, how did you maintain that kind of privacy while a student at MSU?
For the most part, that's pretty accurate. There were people who found out, just like in every phase of my life, when I move and meet new people, there comes a point when I either have to tell them or they figure it out. And if you go too far into a friendship without the pieces sort of being put together, then it's almost a betrayal. So there was a point at MSU. Actually, I have a funny MSU story. The day I moved into the dorms, I was in Lyman Briggs. So I was in Holmes Hall, 516 East Holmes. And my suite mates came over and they said, oh, let's all sit down and get to know each other. So we went to their room and we sat down, and one of the suite mates said, what's your name again? And I said, it's Matab. And she said, boy, that name is just so familiar. And I didn't say anything. And then a few minutes later, she said, oh, I've got it. I know where I know that name from. That's the name of the girl from that movie, Not Without My Daughter. And I said, yeah. And I'm thinking, okay, wow, this is sort of a relief because the cat's out of the bag. Now I don't have to have this between us feeling like I'm hiding something. And she said, whoa, what a coincidence. And she didn't put the pieces together. And but little by little, my friends in the dorms put it together, you know, put the pieces together. And finally, around Halloween time, somebody had to sit her down and say, okay, listen, it's not just a coincidence. But really, it was pretty quiet. And the people who did know then, again, knew the importance of helping protect me by not sharing openly where I lived. But the internet really changed everything for me. So I was a student at Michigan State, a junior. I was turned 21. And this was just, you know, this was, boy, my math isn't that great. This was the, I started at MSU in 1998 and I graduated in 2002. So this is when the internet is just really taking off and becoming something that's a part of everyday life. And it made it impossible to stay hidden. So before, a student directory, you know, I would not have opted to be in a student directory. I made a mistake. I misunderstood the form, and I thought the form was sign here to opt into the student directory, and it was actually sign here to opt out of the student directory. So I was in the student directory without knowing it, and that's how I was found. You know, that's how my dad eventually found me, and mom's, you know, my childhood home, you know, that address, phone number, mom's information was still there too.
You mentioned your father finding you at MSU, and since you've brought it up, we do have to recount that you went through some terrible times when you were at Michigan State University, including being pursued indirectly, but pursued by your father while you were at MSU. So tell us a little bit about that, and while you're at that, I think I'm going to have you read a passage from your book because it has to do with the police at MSU and other police departments helping you maintain your privacy and helping to protect you. So let's start there. Talk about your father finding out that you lived at MSU and what those times were like for you.
So I was at Michigan State when my dad found me, and it was really terrifying. He left a message on the machine, the answering machine at mom's house, and said that I'm 20. Well, first of all, he introduced himself as Dr. Mahmoudi, which I found really ironic later. But this is Dr. Mahmoudi calling my father, and I'm 21. Now I can think for myself. He was going to tell me the truth because everything I had been told to that point was a lie. And when I heard it, I turned to mom and I said, "What? I mean, did he forget I was there? Because I really did have my own memories." So again, it was another direct message from him, and it was another message of control. Mom and I were terrified. We hit the road. We made it as far as Chicago before I needed a passport. My passport had expired, so we went to Chicago, renewed the passport, and you know that's where we sort of decided that I have to go back because it was midterm week. And you know, in the grand scheme of things, I guess now it seems sort of trivial. You know, what do midterms really matter at a time like that? But to me, they mattered. And so I insisted on going back. And we stayed in a different hotel every night. We checked in late at night, checked out early in the morning. Mom drove me to my classes because we were afraid he would be there to film a reunion. He was making a documentary with a producer from Finland. And then we found out that they had arranged for a student from Michigan State to work sort of as an intern on the project. And you know, it felt to me like, in effect, he was stalking me. I didn't know who he was. And so that winter, it was a really rough winter. We'd had a blizzard, and I had to take my last exam. The roads were closed. The state police closed the roads. And I think Michigan State was the only university that did not close that day. And I went to campus, took my exam. When I came out, some two young men followed me. And I was on my way to the parking garage, and they stopped me and asked if I was Mahtab Mahmoodi. And I was terrified because I thought, you know, I sized up the situation. There was a van parked across the road, and it was parked sideways in the parking lot. And it was, you know, so much snow. Nobody was out except the students who had to come take their exams. And I just thought, oh, my dad is in that van, and they're going to, as soon as I say yes, that I'm Mahtab, they're going to ambush me and film a reunion. And so I lied through my teeth and said, no, I have no idea who that is. What do you want with her anyway? And thank God they let me go. And so I ran to my car, and I was just in an absolute panic and went to the police, the MSU police.
And this is a reading from your book, My Name is Mahtab, Mahtab Mahmoodi.
Of all the law enforcement agents who helped us, that detective stood out. That detective being a female detective from the MSU Police Department. She wanted so badly to help me. She gave me a parking pass that would get me into the faculty lots so I could park as close to my classes as possible. She followed up on every lead, ran patrols by my classes, and encouraged me to report anything that made me the least bit uncomfortable. She assured me it didn't matter if it ended up being nothing. No suspicion was too trivial. At one point, I even sat with a sketch artist and described a middle-aged man who had smiled at me in passing. It hadn't been a flirtatious smile, just a smile of acknowledgement. But it was mid-semester, and I had only recently begun to see him as I made my way between classes. That was the first red flag. The second was that he made eye contact and smiled one day as we met on the sidewalk. People just didn't do that on our campus. We kept our heads down and walked with purpose from one building to the next. But this man walked amiably with his head up, smiling at students as he went. On top of that, he bore a slight resemblance to my dad. They had the same slouchy jowls. I knew it was probably nothing, but I was afraid to leave any stone unturned, so I mentioned the man to the detective. She had the sketch artist make a rendering of the man I had seen, and she went and talked with him. As it turned out, he was simply a friendly professor who taught a class in a nearby building. It really was nothing, but in those days, as far as Mom and I were concerned, everything was something.
Mahtab Mahmoodi is the author of My Name is Mahtab. You'll remember her mother, Betty Mahmoodi, and her famous book, Not Without My Daughter, also turned into a film, the story of how they were taken to Iran by Betty Mahmoodi's husband, Mahtab's father, and held there for over a year before they escaped to return to the United States.
And in part two of Scott's talk with Mahtab Mahmoodi later this week, they'll discuss why she decided to forgive her now deceased father and how she has faced the challenges of her adult life. By the way, Thursday evening at 7, Mahtab Mahmoodi will sign her new book, My Name is Mahtab, at Schuler Books in the Meridian Mall.